teacher, do you not care that we are perishing? I think more likely they were like, teacher! Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to the Bible Geeks Podcast. This is episode 14. I'm Brian Sheely.
I'm Ryan Joy.
And thanks so much for tuning in, everyone. Today, we're going to be continuing our Fruit of the Spirit series on the topic of peace. But before we get into that, let's dive into the follow-up from last week's challenge, which was to make a list of anything in your life that would keep you from being patient. We talked about mental Mentos last week. I don't know where that came from, but I was thinking about mental Mentos all week. So did you make a list this week?
I did. I made a list of 9 mental Mentos. Ooh. How about you?
Yeah, I have a good size list. I think I have 7 here on my list. Anything that stands out?
Yeah, there's so many different things. Incompletion and interruption whenever I have multiple strands, multiple things pulling me in different directions. You know, whenever you feel like your own personal values are at stake in each individual demand, but you can't possibly do them all at one time. You know, I want to acknowledge each of my kids. I want people that I love to know that they're loved. And one of the big ways that I want to show that, because it's how I experience that someone values me, is to listen to them and to not ignore or pass over what they're trying to say. But when you have 4 children, each trying to say something to you at the same time, and a wife, and then work demands, and all of these things are trying at the same exact moment, you know, at dinner time or whatever it is, to pull on you, that's something I don't do well with. So many different things.
On my list is not asking questions. I have found myself being the kind of person who can easily lose patience with people when I'm not as connected with them as maybe I could be. And so it seems to me, in my own just personal anecdotal experience, that the more interest that I take in other people's lives, the more likely I am to be patient with them. And so that kind of has to do with yours, you know, asking questions, listening, hearing what people are saying or what they're needing or maybe what they're not saying.
Yeah.
Good challenge. Hopefully it was useful for everyone else. But as we move on here, let's get into our Jesus Said segment. And I guess you have a verse for me.
So we're in Mark chapter 4 here. And right now I'm looking out a window at a raging storm.
Ooh.
You might hear it, probably not, but you might hear it on the mic earlier. It was really blowing. And, you know, you have that rain that's coming down at a 45 degree angle and this bold big picture of a storm. Mm-hmm. Well, that is the place I want to take you to here in Mark chapter 4. In verse 37, as Jesus and the disciples are in a boat on the sea, a great windstorm arose, and the waves were breaking into the boat so that the boat was already filling. But he was in the stern, asleep on the cushion. And they woke him and said to him, "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" And he awoke and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, "Peace, be still." And the wind ceased, and there was a great calm. He said to them, "Why are you so afraid? Have you still no faith?" So what do you think?
I think you did the reading an injustice. So when they're there in this storm in the boat, clearly here they come to him and they say, "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" I think more likely they were like, "Teacher!" Exactly. That's part of the challenge sometimes, I think, in reading some of these passages, is just getting this tone of voice. You know, anytime you write somebody or you text message somebody, sometimes you have to throw an emoji in there to give them like the tone of what you're saying.
Yeah. Bible emojis. That's
Bible
what
emojis.
We need.
Yes. But I have a feeling here that they are afraid, and at the end of their, they think it's the end. They think it's over. But then in a similar way, Jesus goes on when he says, "Peace, be still." The word that is used to describe what he does there is epitimao, which is rebuke. And I think Jesus here is being forceful and assertive and authoritative when he says, "Peace, be still." You know, this loud, authoritative phrase.
Yeah. And there's these two different pictures here of peace. There's this picture of Jesus' authority over everything that would bring chaos into our lives. And then there's the picture of Jesus himself during the storm.
I mean, he was asleep on a cushion. So he is practicing what he preaches, pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and that's us a lot of the time is we are in a little dinghy with waves, you know, crashing over our heads and filling our boat. And do we, in the midst of that chaos, because the life of peace in Christ is not going to be devoid of this kind of storm. So right. Are we able to have faith enough to be at rest in the midst of that?
We were studying last night in our young kids class, the book of Daniel, and specifically in chapter 6, obviously, about the great story of the lion's den and all these things. And one of the things that I kept trying to point out to our class was how Daniel is the kind of person who, no matter what is going on, he is respectful. He is a good citizen. He is, from all accounts, a very peaceful person in the midst of a very difficult situation. And nobody can look at him and say that he is not at peace with his situation. He's not out there protesting. He's not picketing. He's not fighting. He's not angry. He's not bitter. He's at peace. And I think that's a real mark of somebody who is mature in their faith, is to not only believe that everything is going to be okay, but also to let that come out in our lives, to let people see that.
Yeah, that makes me think of Adrian's favorite verse, which is in 1 Thessalonians 4. And it says to aspire to live quietly and to mind your own affairs and to work with your hands, so that you may walk properly before outsiders and be dependent on no one. What Daniel's living, I've heard this term a while back, it's the exile ethic. You know, we see it in Daniel, we see it in Esther and her cousin, we see it in Nehemiah, all of these people who don't belong in this land, you know, they're away from their homes,
right?
But they're going to live a different way. And right. And so Daniel is living at peace. He's quiet. He's living a quiet life in many ways. He's just serving his God, minding his own business. And the only time that gets him into trouble is whenever the thing that is at the core of his life, which is praying to God, serving God, becomes a problem.
Yeah. And so peace is important. And Jesus is saying that peace and this acceptance that he is in control has something directly to do with faith. And so we could go back to our discussion about faithfulness and being firm and fixed, knowing that no matter what happens, God's in control. And I think that does bring us a lot of peace. It does bring us a lot of completeness and wholeness, as we're going to talk about that word in just a little bit. Mm-hmm. So that was good. I'm not sure what I would have done in that boat. I really don't know if I would have been any different than these guys, because times of difficulty and trouble just seem to overwhelm and overtake any amount of logical thinking that we might have.
But I think that sometimes, even as people who are trying to follow the Bible, you can start to live as if the boat is about to tip over.
Right.
And if Jesus is in the boat, you're going to be okay.
Yeah. So let's continue that conversation about peace, and let's go back to the Old Testament. We're going to start a new segment here on the show, which is called Heavy Words.
Whoa, this is heavy.
There's that word again, heavy. Why are things so heavy in the future? Is there a problem with the Earth's gravitational pull?
Let's get in our DeLorean and go look to the Old Testament at a word that is used a lot. And that word is shalom. What does this word convey? What's the sense of the word or the definition of the word?
E.R. Clendenin described this word shalom as harmony, well-being, and prosperity. The Hebrew word shalom is, he says, one of the most prominent theological concepts in the Old Testament, which is absolutely clear as it starts to be reflected in the Old and the New Testament. He said it's wholeness and completeness, an uninjured, safe, complete, and peaceable state. Peace could refer to harmony between friends or allies, triumph in war, success in one's endeavors, good health, and security. So there's this idea of wellness to it, which, you know, you might say, still to this day, people in Hebrew might say to one another, shalom, or do you have shalom, or may you have shalom. May you be well. May everything be good with you. May you have wholeness and completeness and harmony and well-being in your life. But of course, all of this is most deeply rooted in a spiritual wholeness and spiritual well-being that starts in relationship to God.
On one hand, it talks about well-being and security. But anytime you talk about well-being and security, you kind of have to go to the other side of it. And you have to look and really accept the fact that life is complicated and life is not always in order, or this idea of peace or shalom conveying this completeness like a wall built of uncut stones that's all completely fashioned together, fixed together and firm and whole. The idea of a, on the other side of it would be a broken down wall, a wall that wasn't secure, a wall that would easily be tipped over. And that is the way life feels sometimes, is just full of cracks, full of holes, missing pieces. And the goal of shalom, the goal of peace, is to make it whole, to put it back together, to bring security, to bring well-being. And I think a lot of times that's what we're looking for in life. We want peace. We want this idea of completeness or security or wholeness. And you can go to any self-help bookstore or section of a bookstore, and you can just see tons and tons of books on this idea of security or safety or peace or being at peace. And I think there's a lot of levels to that. And I think that's something that we are all looking for, which is why it resonates with so many people when the Bible talks about peace, when it talks about wholeness and security.
Yeah, and those books on peace really focus on inner peace usually. I did a lesson on shalom a while back where I did a graphic with these concentric circles of peace. And where we usually want to focus is on inner peace, or maybe on peace with everybody in the world. You know, if you think of these concentric circles, the middle circle, the starting point for all the other kinds of peace, is peace with God. And from peace with God comes that inner peace, which Philippians 4:7 says, and the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus. So the Bible does talk about this idea of our hearts and minds being guarded by an almost incomprehensible peace. And then from there comes peace with brethren, with other brothers and sisters in Christ. And Romans 14:19 says, so we then pursue the things which make for peace and the building up of one another. And that needs to be a hallmark of our relationships with each other, is that sense of harmony and wholeness and completeness, that sense that we can relate to each other in peace. And then from there, then we strive for peace with all. So Paul says in Romans 12:18, if possible, so far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all. But what we want to talk about usually is we want to skip that peace with God. I mean, you know, the help. The self-help books want to tell you to find peace by telling yourself everything is okay. You know, and so you have this, if you tell yourself often enough that it's going to be all right, you have peace, you are secure, then maybe you'll believe it. And that's exactly what the prophets talk about. So Ezekiel and Jeremiah talk about these false prophets saying peace, peace, when there is no peace. Ezekiel 13:10 talks about. And we want to do that to ourselves today. And he compares them. It's funny, you made that analogy to a wall that's falling apart. Ezekiel compares them to an unstable wall. And the actual situation they're in is an unstable wall, but they're smearing it with whitewash as if they can plaster it and make it pretty. But if it's a crumbling wall, you can paint it the most beautiful color and it's still going to fall.
The temptation a lot of times just to convince ourselves that things are okay. Things are fine. Yeah. There's that meme of the, I think it's the dog sitting at the table drinking coffee while like the whole room is on fire. He's like, this, things are okay. Nothing's wrong here. Convincing ourselves that we're all right. Everything's fine. We can be at peace when we aren't opening up our eyes to the situation around us. Not to say that the times of trial and difficulties around us cause us to lack peace. Mm-hmm. But really, if you get down to the center of those concentric circles that you're talking about, the center point of all of that is peace with God. And if you have peace with God, you have peace everywhere else. Maybe not necessarily physically, maybe not necessarily everything is going to work out in a peaceful way, but you have the most important kind of peace, the most important kind of shalom that you can have when you have peace with God. And I think that is in Mark 4. That is what Jesus is really saying. If you have peace with me, well, then all the rest of this stuff will work out.
Yeah, that's the starting point for all other peace. And the two main themes in the Old Testament that have to do with shalom, the first main theme of shalom is sacrifice. And so there are these peace offerings that would bring peace. And then the second theme starts to show up in Isaiah 9 and Isaiah 11. There's the beginning of a description of someone who is going to come and bring peace. A Prince of Peace who is described both as an eternal Father, a God himself, and as this baby that's going to be born. He's described as someone who will bring peace and bring a community of peace in chapter 11 in the remnant of Israel, which is us.
Yeah.
And so those two themes are really the foundation for the discussion of peace that we start to find in the New Testament as Jesus himself is that Prince of Peace who brings peace through the sacrifice that reconciles us to God.
There have been so few times of actual peace, even today. Yeah. We don't have peace today. We're, you know, on the brink of war with this nation or that nation. You know, other nations are fighting with each other. Mm-hmm. And just in general, peace is something that we want, we say we want, but is never really going to come unless we do one very important thing, and that's submit to God. And until everyone submits to God, until everyone has peace with God, then that peace between us is never really going to exist.
You know, you think of the beauty pageant queen that is asked, well, what do you want most in the world? I want world peace.
World peace.
And it's a lovely dream. And someday there will be world peace, but not on this side of eternity.
But that's not to say that we just throw up our hands and give up all attempts at peace now. We need to be the kinds of people like it talks about in Proverbs chapter 16. When a man's ways please the Lord, he makes even his enemies to be at peace with him. We are not the kind of people who look to our enemies and abandon all thoughts of peace. We still have the thought of peace. We still have the motivation or the goal of peace with other people. But that only comes by us living in peace with the Lord, knowing full well that that's not going to be reciprocated necessarily, but we have to be the kind of people who are okay being at peace.
I saw this painting that has, I think it's called Peace in the Storm. And we can put a link to it, but it's the storm is going on all around, and there's this giant waterfall, and it's kind of the opposite of the dog chaos meme you were talking about, because in the midst of all of this, there is a little bird's nest set in a cleft in the rock, and this tiny, tiny picture of peace in the midst of the storm and the waterfall and the rushing seas and everything that's around, because this bird has found a safe spot in the midst of all of it. And that the cleft in the rock, as we often sing, is Jesus Christ. God, Yahweh, is the place where we find that security, wholeness, and hope.
And so as we transition to the New Testament, obviously in the Old Testament, in the Hebrew, this word shalom was used. In the New Testament, there's an analogous word, which is eirene. It conveys a lot of the same ideas as shalom. But what do you think about Matthew chapter 10, verse 34? Because Jesus says something that I wrestle with. And I thought maybe you would pick this as our Jesus said segment, but you didn't. So I'm going to bring it up now.
Yeah.
So Jesus says, "Do not think that I have come to bring peace to the earth." Now, wait a second. Hold on. What did we just talk about from Isaiah chapter 9?
Yeah.
The government of his peace will be no end. He's the Prince of Peace. And now he's saying, "I have not come to bring peace to the earth." Mm-hmm. What is he saying there? And why is he seeming to speak from both sides of this argument?
The conflict, again, we're going to be peacemakers in the world, but the conflict is going to be whenever someone doesn't like that we are serving the Lord. And we are still in a world where there are going to be forces of darkness opposing us.
Right.
And we look to the time when there will only be the righteous, only be those who are honoring Jesus in that new heavens and new earth. But today, we will find conflict no matter what we do. We will sometimes find conflict just because we're serving the Lord.
Yeah, I think Jesus is just holding up here this idea that if you're looking for physical peace with other people, you got to look somewhere else. Because it's not coming from me. My goal here, my main motivation is not to bring world peace. And in the minds of some of the disciples at this point in time, they might have been thinking that. Thinking from a physical kingdom standpoint, from an earthly kingdom, an earthly government. And as they, as Israelites, are in the midst of Roman rule, they probably are thinking Jesus is going to come and he's going to bring a peaceful situation on this earth. And that's not what he's doing. That's not his motivation. It's not to bring peace on the earth. It's to bring peace between men and God primarily. And that's what Paul talks about in Colossians chapter 1, when he says in verse 19, "For in him all the fullness of God was pleased to dwell, and through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether on earth or in heaven, making peace by the blood of the cross." This is not about just pure peace between men on this earth. That's a small goal in comparison to the huge goal that Jesus was really here for.
It's a ripple.
It is.
It's an effect of peace with God. Everyone who has peace with God will begin to be a peacemaker, but again, it won't be complete as long as people are opposing him. So on the one hand, you don't want to sell short this message throughout the prophets and throughout the Bible that there is a kind of a peace that comes to the whole world because of Christians serving God, that we are trying to live at peace with all men. And if you look down through history, the only way that there was ever anything resembling peace was when some empire came and made half of the population of every place they conquered into slaves. Mm-hmm. And they just, through cruelty and oppression, made peace. And that was kind of the best that there was. That was the Pax Romana, the Peace of Rome, was, you know, 50% of the Roman Empire is estimated to have become slaves. You know, this is peace. But Jesus has brought, in some ways, a different kind of peace in the world, as throughout, especially the West, biblical principles have spread through cultures and started to affect things, and yet the conflicts remain. So things are better as those who actually follow him are sowing seeds of peace. You know, that promise is not going to find complete fulfillment in that kind of a peace. And so Jesus, on the one hand, tells us to be peacemakers, says, "I bring peace to you," but at the same time says, "You're going to have troubles, and there's going to be a sword, a division that comes from serving me just as much as hopefully there will also be peace that comes."
I think it also, in this conversation, it reminds us of how much work it takes to have peace.
Yeah.
And Paul encourages us in Ephesians 4 to put effort into being at peace. It's going to take work for us to be at peace. It's going to take work for us to be the kinds of people who are at peace with others. And he says in Ephesians 4:1, "I therefore, a prisoner of the Lord, urge you to walk in a manner worthy of the calling to which you have been called, with all humility and gentleness, with patience, bearing with one another in love, eager to maintain the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. All these things that we've talked about here in the fruit of the Spirit, they take work.
Yeah.
Putting ourselves lower, it takes being gentle, it takes being patient, it takes showing love, and maintaining this unity of the Spirit. It's maintenance. We constantly have to go and maintain the wall of our unity, the wall of our peace. And it's not like you just build it and then it continuously and forever and ever shall be whole and complete. You've got to maintain it.
Yeah. What a gift to give to someone, or what a thing to create, to make peace and to maintain peace. To do that work is really a blessing that God, through his people and through his work, brings into the world. Adrian and I sometimes talk about people we know, people in our lives and ourselves, with a numeric system of, are they a one, a two, or a three? And it's just like a shorthand that we use that just talks about how whenever someone, to put it in the terms of peace, doesn't have inner peace because they don't have real peace with God, they're scattered and broken, as we all are when we come to God. And that shows up in the relationships and the way they talk to people and the way everything around them in their lives comes from that. And that's a one. You know, that's someone who, whenever you are with them, if you are a two, you know, you have some sense of what it is to have peace with God, then you are pulling them up, or they are pulling you down, you know? Yeah. And then there are those people who just, this is a three in our minds, those people who are constantly doing the work, it seems, that you're talking about, constantly doing the work first with God, confessing any lack of integrity, any break in wholeness of the wall, you know, that are really living in fellowship, constantly reflecting on that. And then their relationships with others are characterized completely, it seems, by the fruit of the Spirit, you know? And so if you are walking around living with the heart of that circle, peace with God affecting every other part of your life, but you're trying to make peace with someone that doesn't have peace with God, there is only so much you can do.
Yeah.
You can create a kind of superficial peace, but that's the best peace that you can create unless you call them into the gospel and its message of peace. So that's ultimately what we're doing in peacemaking. And so peace is the quintessential blessing that we pray into the world, because ultimately all of these things, my peace, the peace I would give to those who don't have it, and the peace I want to have with everyone around me, are all gifts from God. And so maybe it's worth fleshing out the rest of the blessing that you close with every episode in number 6, verses 24 to 26.
May the Lord bless you and keep you.
And I think we've got to, at some point, have a whole episode on blessings and on that word, may the Lord bless you and keep you. You know, a blessing is, it's a prayer, but it's spoken before God to someone else, ultimately, is how I think of it. And so this priestly blessing, the blessing that the priests were commanded to say to the people in the Old Testament, was, the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift his countenance upon you and give you peace. And so, of course, the New Testament reflects this same blessing whenever it shortens it down to the essence of the whole thing, grace and peace.
Yeah.
That's what we want for everyone. That needs to be our prayer. That can be a greeting we say to each other. May God's grace be upon you, and may he give you as his gift, shalom.
And it feels like sometimes, as often as Paul says that, as often as Peter says that in their letters, it feels like a throwaway, but there's so much depth there.
Oh, yeah.
It's not a throwaway. It's not just a, hey, what's up? Oh, hey, I'm good. Mm-hmm. It's what we need. We need grace and we need peace. Mm-hmm. And if you could say that we need anything, we need those two things. Mm-hmm. All right. So let's get into the challenge for this episode. We haven't talked about Psalm 46, but in Psalm 46, verse 10, the psalmist says, "Be still and know that I am God." And I think maybe a good challenge for this week for myself and hopefully for everyone else is to find a time this week where you can be quiet. Maybe it's in the morning, maybe it's in the evening after everyone's gone to bed, but find a time where you can be quiet and still and know that the Lord is God. Recognize that the Lord is God and that He is the one who brings true peace.
Amen.
And hopefully that will be useful in realizing that God is the one who brings true peace and true stillness. Mm-hmm. All right, everyone. Thanks so much for tuning into the Bible Geeks podcast. You can send us an email if you head on over to our website at BibleGeeks.fm. Click the link at the top of the page to shoot us a message. We'd love to get in touch with you. You can also find us on social media. We are /TheBibleGeeks wherever you might find us. And until next week, everyone, may the Lord bless you and keep you.
Shalom.